This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're tuned in to the Gangsta Chronicles with James McDonald, Reggie Wright Jr., and Alex Alonzo on the Digital Soapbox Network.
I have a material witness on an aggravated battery with a handgun, and they believe this might be in retaliation to her testimony.
Welcome to another episode of the Gangsta Chronicles. This is Alex Alonzo from Street TV, and I'm here with
Reggie Wright
and James.
And we have a great episode for you guys, and we appreciate everyone that comes to our page, and whether it's the Facebook page, Instagram page, and submits information. And we're going to start this off with some fact-checking from last week. You couldn't remember Red Something or Other. The neighborhood that they were shooting the video, we're talking about the Snoop Dogg video, or was it the Dog Pound video?
Dog Pound.
Where the shooting happened was Red Hook.
Or New York, New
which
York.
Which is a neighborhood
okay.
in Brooklyn.
Okay.
So that was Red Hook, y'all. And Red Hook is a well-known area in Brooklyn. I remember it when I was a kid living in New York. Okay. And then I remember you said Biggie called it, right?
Yeah.
You remember saying?
Yeah.
So here's exactly what was said on the radio. According to Snoop Dogg, Snoop Dogg actually did an interview in 2018 where he talked about this for the very first time. And he says, we went up to the radio station to get at Funkmaster Flex so we could let everyone in New York know that we brought our lowriders out. We're shooting a video. All the New York rappers, come mess with us. And then eventually he said Flex gets a call from Biggie and says Biggie goes on the radio via phone, like you guys mentioned, and he says that Flex gets a call from Biggie. That nigga, Biggie, goes, what's happening, nigga? Red Hook is where the Dog Pound and Snoop Dogg are shooting a video. Brooklyn, stand up. So that was Biggie's words to Funkmaster Flex on the radio. And I guess some people interpreted that as saying,
that's exactly
go
what
do
he meant.
Something.
That's exactly what he meant.
And yeah. then it says here, we don't know, according to Snoop, we don't know what that means. We think niggas are coming to the show to show some love, like Brooklyn Stand Up. So we're still shooting the video. This is Snoop talking. The Dog Pound, we're all out in the snow in front of the bricks, and we go back to the trailer. And then I guess the shooting kind of happens.
Well, like I always tell y'all about Snoop, bitch ass, these days. He's trying to be a politician. Go listen to Trey D. Trey D tell you more in detail. He just did an interview with Vlad. Where they heard him calling off all the different names, like you, Snot Nose, this nose, this person, all of those different names. Y'all need to, you know, like y'all need to go do something. He called off a bunch of street nigga names that's in the area and pretty much incited them to put in some work. Check it out. He just said it on Vlad interview.
Well, he said Snoop's in this interview from last year says you could watch one of the episodes of Unsolved. And he said that they depicted what happened in New York and Red Hook, Brooklyn, pretty accurately. I don't remember the episode.
Unsolved.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I mean, don't y'all see it like, I don't think nobody ever looked at Snoop like that. Snoop Dogg has not really been outside of Long Beach, you know what I'm saying, until his music, right? So is Snoop Dogg like a, you can ask this one, Reggie. a big name in the neighborhood before rap.
No, no, he just was a little youngster, like most were, selling cocaine on the corner. But that's not my point. My point is just that now, and because who knows what he was feeling and feeling 94, 95, 96 and all of that, because he was on top of the world. My point is, and he's still, you know, very successful. My point is he's trying to be more of a politician now than ever.
Right, yeah, but now. I'm saying back in
which is
these
smart.
Days.
I mean, you know, he doesn't.
He had never spoke about this incident in years. What do you think made him want to talk about it last year?
It's been a big topic of subject.
Even though it happened, 20-something years ago?
We talk about Tupac on the show during every podcast we done did.
Yeah.
And that happened 23, 24 years ago.
That's true. But someone getting killed and a trailer getting shot are two different things.
Well, we associate why Snoop is being disloyal. Tupac is a subject to us because we all feel that he's trying to act like he's cool with Pop, but in our mind and most of the community mind, he is a bitch.
That's typical nigga shit, though. Niggas get mad at each other. Motherfuckers go their way and then they come back and smile in your face, but still really ain't got over that issue.
Yeah.
But then smile because they know we got to function. Yeah. So they smile in your face and they ain't really over it. So the animosity is still there. So you have motherfuckers that crawl up under their skirts opposed to, you know, letting that shit go as men.
Yeah.
You got some cats, like they say, niggas is bitches too. So they think like that.
I mean, the hottest thing that's out right now is Snoop and Puffy been trolling, you know, they say trolling Suge or whatever, which I don't give a fuck about. But
Trolling.
Oh, okay. That's the youngsters know word. But him and Puffy hanging out together at Puffy House in New Jersey with Death Row chains on. Well, Snoop had a Death Row chain dancing, and then, you know, Puffy pretty much asked, you know, made the statement what Suge said to him at the Source Awards. So.
All right. Well, what I found interesting about what Snoop said in this 2018 interview was after hearing what Biggie said on the radio, he says, we didn't know what that meant. We thinking niggas are coming to show some love, like Brooklyn, stand up.
And that was one of my points just saying right now. Snoop Dogg is out of Long Beach. How much knowledge on gang shit does he really have at this time?
So if you hear Biggie on the radio saying, what's happening, nigga? Red Hook is where the Dog Pound and Snoop are shooting a video. Brooklyn, stand up.
And
how do you interpret that?
I take that as a threat. It sounds like a threat. Because if he was talking, whoop, whoop, come on, man. Nigga ain't the word.
Now, I just put some extras on it because I don't know how Biggie actually said that on the
radio. Well, see, I mean, I got to know how Biggie said it.
I could say it a different way. I could say, what's happening, y'all? Red Hook is where Dog Pound and Snoop are shooting a video. Brooklyn, stand up.
That's codes, man.
You know?
Those are codes. Anybody know that? That just sound like codes. Man, they up there, get there.
It was a song, this in New York, in their mind. You know, you listen to Corrupt. Corrupt will tell you all day that they were paying homage to New York. They wanted to go to Times Square and have Biggie and Puff and other people like that from New York to come in and dance in the video.
Exactly. And the coolest thing about that, those dudes had the money to pay the little homies to go out there and do shit like that. Dudes shooting up shit and fucking with shit like that.
But,
so this.
Yeah. But, you know, now you'll hear most people to say it was a Jimmy Henchman call anyway. Jimmy Henchman is actually the one that sent somebody to fire the shots at the trailer, and it wasn't even so much to call out on the radio, so you never know.
Yeah, I was just wondering, was the radio comment by Biggie really meant?
Yeah.
For brothers?
Oh, it was meant.
Yeah,
it was meant. It was taken that way, or he would have denied.
See, I got to hear the tone.
He had never denied it, and people always say, "Well, why Biggie? You know, did he really mean this, or why did he really feel this way?" You go listen at that rap that he did. In L.A., on the radio station out here, The Long Kiss Goodbye. He was pretty much bagging about having something to do with Pac getting killed then. So, come on, we give Biggie a pass to try to make him a saint because we love his mama so much. But, man, everybody played a part.
All right, so also last week, I thought it was kind of cool when Spider actually remembered a line from Jay-Z when we were talking about East Coast, West Coast, the South. We give Dre his props, but that's where it stops. Where Dre was basically, where Jay-Z was basically saying, we don't really like the West Coast.
Yeah.
That was actually on a song called The Watcher 2. And guess who produced the album or the song? Dr. Dre. When I looked it up, I saw Dr. Dre's name was on it, and that's from the album The Blueprint 2, released November 2002. So
guess who for $100,000 wrote Dre Day?
Who's that?
Jay-Z. The biggest song on Chronic, well, one of the biggest songs on Chronic 2001.
He didn't ghostwrite it. He wrote it.
He wrote it.
Okay.
Yes.
So yeah, I didn't know that there was this this long relationship between Dr. Dre and
we talked
Jay-Z.
99, 98, and so.
Well, this song came out in 2002.
Yeah.
And I guess even in 2002, the East Coast still wasn't giving the West Coast love when it came to music. Because you got the biggest rapper in New York basically saying, hey, we don't really mess with the West, but we mess with Dr. Dre.
Because he just paid me $100,000 to write a big song on his album.
And he was one of the producers on that song. So
yeah.
That was last week when Spider said that. Now,
Shout out to Jay-Z, still becoming a billionaire.
Last week you said that the Death Row bankruptcy was around 08, 09, I think, but it was actually 06. Does that make sense? 2006?
Well, I don't understand 08, 09. If I did, I misspoke it. I think that's when I said I went back to start helping Shug out with that during that time. But I knew that it, I think I said 05, 06.
Okay, well, I'll fact check later on. But yeah. What's really interesting about that is that the bankruptcy didn't complete until 2016.
Yeah.
That's basically 10, 11 years. Why so long?
Oh, shit, because there was still money to be made, and only persons make money in a bankruptcy.
Look, is
the attorneys.
Exactly.
And the, what they call that guy, the one that's over everything. The trustee or something like that? And the trustee, humbug ass. You know about that. You just did one in 2016.
Now, I found an article from 2016 that said that Dr. Dre was owed $8 million from the bankruptcy. Nate Dogg was owed $5
million.
Tupac was owed $1 million, and none of them got the money.
None of them got paid. But everybody put in a claim in. You put a claim in. You throw it up against the wall, hope for the best, and, you know.
And Snoop Dogg's claim was $2
million.
Yeah. Guess what Suge's claim was?
What?
$144 million. No one got any money except for the lawyers. Guess how much the lawyers got? $8.3 million.
No, they got more than that.
God damn.
You think they got more than that?
Well, the company sold, Death Row, the catalog sold for like $26 million. And so all of that money was absorbed.
Well, usually lawyers get
some
either.
Some corrupt of dads and one of them get.
They got a judgment. When they got a judgment.
Never got paid.
They never got paid. Herio, the person that we filed the bankruptcy for was Michael Herio. He never got it. Him or Lydia never got any money.
Well, it says here, Afeni.
Finish your core.
She got some money. Tupac's mom got
the taxes
$75K and then later $57K. So that's what, pennies? Really, when you think about it.
but what was her claim? And what was she owed? Because by then, you know, everything had been resolved. So it's not like that's all she got. We're not going to start that rumor because.
So what do you think all the money went, Red?
Huh? To the goddamn trustee and the attorneys. Fees. Paper.
All the money that he had?
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, the money! Oh, he lived off that. Suge always been broke.
You're talking
that's
about
that's y'all to believe Suge had money. Suge had money coming in, and he would spend it as it came. Always, always. As soon as the company got some money, that's why I end up owning the building on Wilshire, 8200 Wilshire, because I had to refinance that to get money out to pay Dick Griffey and give Michelle some money and the DLC.
Is it fair to say that Death Row grossed over $500 million?
Yes.
Gross. Yeah. But that's the Interscope, Time Warner, everybody making
or even money. More than that.
Yeah.
Or is that about it?
I don't know. I mean, we was able to do whatever the fuck we want, you know, and he done had yachts and all of that stuff. But I'm just saying it wasn't like what people would think he had $10 million, $15 million, $20 million sitting, you know, sitting in the county one time. But he would go and get the money and be a nigga and spend it.
I was just shocked that the bankruptcy took 10 years to resolve from 06 to 16. That is unbelievable.
Those attorneys and that trustee weren't letting that money go until it was all gone.
Also, last week we talked about, you mentioned Michael Durow.
Lil Al.
That Lil Al from Corner Pocket, I believe.
No. He's from, Lil Al's from the South.
Yeah. I'm sorry. He's from Southside.
Yeah.
The Stone Brothers are from Corner Pocket.
Oh,
actually, it was a father and a nephew. So Michael Durow was actually sentenced to 3 life terms without parole in 1999, plus 49 years for his role in the shootout at the Compton Car Wash, which was on Alondra.
Alondra. It's right by Compton, next door to, it's tore down now. It was right across, next door to
Alondra
High School.
And Oleander.
Yeah.
And for everyone who doesn't know, the people involved in that, it was Orlando Anderson and Michael Durow. They were homeboys. And they confronted Michael Stone and his
Stone.
Nephew, Jerry Stone. Mm. And the way the story goes,
who had a relationship?
They all did at some point.
Yeah.
And there's two theories of what happened. One was over a drug debt.
That's the only theory that I ever heard.
And the other theory, one theory I read was it was over gang conflict, but it didn't sound plausible.
No. If you're over a gang problem, you don't go confront.
You just start dumping. Yeah. So apparently, I think Michael Stone pulled out a gun first. Michael Durow was like, hey, put that gun away. I guess Michael Stone didn't listen. And then Orlando pulled his out, and then they started shooting.
Yeah.
So Orlando started shooting and shot Michael Stone and Jerry Stone, and then Michael Durow grabbed Orlando's gun because one of the Stones was still alive, and then I believe he shot Jerry Stone.
Yeah, he grabbed
in self-defense, I would say.
That's what my point was. Unfortunately for Lil Al, he didn't even bring a gun to the gun battle.
Michael Durow. Yeah, he came unarmed, and he was the passenger in the car with Orlando Anderson and didn't even go there with any intentions of a shooting.
None.
And ends up with 3 life sentences. Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
The murder felony rule. But he was with him because they were cross street at the hamburger stand, and they planned to go over there and confront him. That's where they get that. If he wouldn't have said, we went over there to confront him, guess who stopped him when they were trying to leave to go to the hospital?
Who's that?
Senior, Reggie Wright Senior. He the one pulled him over and pulled out Michael, which was like his nephew. I mean, him and Michael, Lil Al was real close.
So I just think it's kind of unfortunate what happened to Michael Reed DeRoe.
Michael, you know, he's been to jail before. He shot a CHP officer before.
Yeah, but the past,
when he was a juvenile.
The past doesn't matter.
Yes, it does. That's a big thing.
You can change.
Yeah, whatever.
You definitely can change.
Right.
You can change,
man. Look at me.
You can change. But once you go in there and get caught doing something else, playing with gunplay, then no.
Well, I know on that day, I think it's fair to say that Michael DeRoe had no intentions of shooting anybody.
His intentions was when me and you say, let's go over here and confront James. And
let's go get our money.
Let's go get our money.
They owe us some money.
And we know we got guns and all of that. And
well, Orlando had a gun.
Well,
he didn't have a gun.
But he must admit that he knew that.
Orlando probably always carried a gun.
And you don't think his homeboy know that?
Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
Always carry guns. They want to backtrack.
Well, I might be exaggerating. But not your homeboy doesn't always tell you he's armed. Because he might say, hey, can you give me a ride?
Sometimes.
You got anything on you? Nah, I'm clean. And he ain't clean. He needs a ride, though.
Yeah.
And he probably got an ounce in his pocket, a strap in his back pocket, but he wants that ride. You get pulled over, and you're like, damn, everybody going to jail. Because he didn't say that he was dirty.
But what you just said? Orlando, what?
Orlando's usually dirty.
Always have a gun.
Well, that's the belief that he was pretty active. So when you're active, you probably always strapped.
And everybody knows that. I know money. I know he got a strap.
Exactly.
So that is not a question whether he had it.
You
or
don't
not.
Even ask that. That's not something we talk about.
But I don't think that Michael DeRoe should be held to a certain standard because his homeboy got a gun. 90% of the time, that gun's not getting pulled out.
We on the same page though. If we go and I got the gun, I'm going to hold the gun on him. You take the money or you do the talking and I got the pistol. Anybody move, I got it. That can go either way.
Moral to the story is, and y'all need to watch 48 Hours because y'all should see how cops, we celebrate when niggas talk. As soon as we walk out of the room.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Boot, when you get in that motherfucking boot, shut the fuck. As a cop, they used to tell us, you get in a shooting, good or bad, make them order you to talk. Don't talk because you're setting a trend. If you talk when it's good and then when you have a bad shooting or a questionable shooting and you don't talk. So don't talk. That's what all the your attorneys, your reps will tell you. So only thing you say to a police officer when they put you in the box, hey, officer. And that's how you say it. So they won't lie and start creating shit on you. Only thing you just say to also, hey, if you was in my position, or if I was one of your family members, what would you do? We'll say that to them. And if they can't respect that and hear that out, then they're not good for you anyway. Because they'd be, you know what, you're right, man. A good cop would be like, you're right.
Yeah, but that...
But look at 48 Hours. And y'all see.
I mean...
They give each other high fives and stuff like that as soon as they get you to talk. And that's how most of the time you see them, they don't even know. I wish I could do a book on, man.
You
tell
think
them
48 Hours is solving cases like that, could solve a case like that in Compton in 48 Hours?
Niggas talk all the time. That's the only way. If you don't have an eyewitness, that's the only way cops solve cases, is by niggas open up their mouths.
Yeah. But what does that got to do
they
with...
they solving them in 48 hours?
Well, they say the first 48 hours is the most important in a homicide investigation.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But most of the time, it'd be 6 months. It'd be 6 months long.
Yeah.
But, yeah, if you got the players, I mean, you know how many times Reggie done got people in the box. And, I mean, man.
Well, the last thing I want to say about that Michael Reed situation was that Michael Stone was the guy that pulled out the gun first. He's the one that pulled the strap out. And Michael's telling him, hey, put that away. We ain't here for all of that.
But then Orlando
pulls
it out. Pulls
his out. Yeah. Well, I'm not sure who's the first shooter in that situation. I don't think anyone really knows.
Well, Orlando probably wouldn't have pulled his if old boy wouldn't have pulled his. That just here's. I mean,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
And when I know I'm guilty and I know I'm owing you, I'm gonna be a little bit more aggressive. And when I know you owe me, I'm going to be aggressive, too.
Just put it like this. Certain motherfuckers ain't taking that and ain't playing
ain't taking that.
That
deal.
You put out a pistol on me, that's a sign of disrespect.
He probably been looking for him for a long time.
So let's do what it do.
Yeah.
And
I've been waiting to find you. I done been by your house. I done been
now,
everywhere.
The unfortunate part is the law they have, that if you commit the crime, you get all the murders.
Yeah, the murder felony.
That's the coldest.
Yeah, he got triple life sentence.
Because of who?
I ain't even got gunpowder on my hand. And I got triple life plus 49.
Three life terms plus 49 years.
But you know, California's turn. It's something called Rule 19. If you can make that up next year, something called Rule 19 or 19 that a lot of guys getting out now for that felony murder rule.
Yeah, I believe that Michael DeRoe will be out. Lil Al will be out soon, but he's already been in there. 20. We're in 2000.
Yeah.
2009.
He's been in there for 20 years already.
Yeah.
You know?
So three lives is only worth 20 years to you.
And it's incredible that he got charged with all three of those murders and got sentenced to three life terms plus 49. So.
Plus you got to remember his record. He shot a police officer before.
Yeah.
Okay, was he convicted for that?
Yeah.
Okay.
As a juvenile.
Well, it don't count then. No, it really doesn't.
But you know what?
They might bring it up, but an adult, they'll tell the jury not to take this into account.
But they shouldn't even bring it up, though.
It's supposed to be sealed.
No, let me say this. It's not even about the...
He probably took a deal. He probably never went to trial on that, did he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he took a deal.
But, no, my point was the judge took it in consideration in sentencing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, judges can do whatever they want to do in most instances.
Yeah, exactly.
There's really no... accountability on stuff like that. And we don't know the situation or circumstances of why he shot the... was it a CHP officer?
Yeah, I forget. Jumping out of a stolen car or something.
I'd love to pull that case up.
I know he's 12 or 13 years old. 13, 14, when it happened.
Well, yeah. God damn, he started young.
Oh, he's a...
And he one of the first. And, you know, they always say, how can you be out there doing a drive-by? It's five of y'all in the car with five guns. One police officer pull you over and take everybody to jail.
Because everybody ain't willing to take that penitentiary chance.
But goddammit, it don't make you taking a penitentiary chance doing a drive-by.
Well, they just came out with three-strike laws where we started getting, man, you remember, I remember a gun case in Compton used to be a misdemeanor case, especially the first time. 10 days in county jail, 3 years probation.
And that's what they did to me.
Yeah. I know what it was on your part.
They gave me.
I know.
Lee Ford actually helped me out on that because dude didn't come to court.
Yeah.
That's when they used to do the 72-hour thing.
Yeah.
They don't do that no more. And dude was at the light with us, and he got the throwing it up gangbanger. We on Rosecrans and Bradfield.
Yeah.
And we just celebrating, just leaving out the park, celebrating Top Dog's birthday, and they just got the throwing rags all out the van, just banging. And... unfortunately, somebody shot at him, right? So the police was, Paradin was Paradin. Two cars behind us.
And saw it.
And they caught us. Then when he took us to jail, he say, I saw you do it. You ain't seen me do shit.
Yeah.
So Paradin was a cop too?
Yeah.
But he was also
the mayor.
He was a mayor?
He was the mayor.
Was he also the
DA? He's still
and
the DA.
And the DA? Damn, this guy was the cop, mayor.
Assistant DA. He was my partner. I mean, he's my father's trainee, and he eventually was my training officer.
I met him at the Luther's Park Plunge at the pool.
He always worked in the city. His daddy was over the his brother Percy Paradin was a commander at the police department.
Now I remember Eric Paradin won the mayor, but then they overturned it and gave it to Omar Radley.
No, it never happened.
He kept the full term as mayor.
He was
for about eight, 12. I don't want to put him in. Now they filed a claim against because he didn't claim some of the money that I gave him when I was working for Death Row, and he had to pay that back like $12,000 or $14,000. But Omar,
when the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said, my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
Every week, we'll pick a new song from the list and talk about their placement on the revamped 2021 list.
We'll also have guests join us, ranging from the artists themselves to the producers, or simply other writers like ourselves who voted on them.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern-day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside and Britney Spears' Baby One More Time.
There's so many fascinating stories that have been forgotten, like Midnight Train to Georgia starting with a phone call to Farrah Fawcett, or how the Yeah Yeah Yeahs inspired Kelly Clarkson's banger Since You've Been Gone and Beyoncé's Hold Up. Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout, and woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's why he hates me to this day, because he was running a wreck in the city. And I was like, oh, okay.
Why would you say he was running a wreck?
He was running around.
I sat in that trial against Omar Bradley, and all the allegations they had against him were ticky-tack financial, they're all small-time expenses. I was waiting to hear.
A week ago, just got found, his case just finally got where it got conviction of staying.
Yeah, he tried to get it appealed.
Omar Bradley was a gangster, man.
He tried. Straight gangster. But let me just say this. Let me say this about Omar.
And people was mad at him for it.
And the one thing about when he was there, that city was clean.
Yeah.
He was big on making public servant. I forget the department. But the one to clean up the city and all that, he stayed on the ass.
But that's in that trial, I was shocked.
These streets wouldn't be the way they are under his watch.
I was waiting to hear misappropriation of hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know what the offenses that Omar Bradley was convicted of? It was buying a souvenir at a golf gift shop.
That's all that they got. Because they started paying the money things. Back once they knew they were getting back investigated.
Yeah, they talked about he was trying to pay, was trying to pay back $300.
That was the one
$800.
Time.
It was all small amounts.
But he was using the city credit card, and they were paying it back. And they had it for years, but the city manager took the fall for most of it, which was his boy, him, Omar Raw, which was my professor from Cal State Long Beach, got a lot of respect from me for him. But they were doing things, and that's what they got him on.
Getting a hotel because they're going to have a meeting, and they're using the city card to get a hotel. All the spending was minor. So I feel like he was targeted. I was like, they don't like Omar.
Yeah,
they want to get rid of Omar.
Oh, yeah, didn't like
they don't want Omar to ever run for public office again. Because he spent $10 on
it. No, it wasn't $10.
Some of these things actually cost.
It added up.
Yeah, it added up. Yeah. One of the things was a ball marker you use in golf. That's $10 in the gift shop.
They did more than.
Well, yeah, some of the checks were $300, $400,
they had a
hotel room.
When they were $5,000 was the most that the city manager can do without approval. They had about 20 items for $4,999.
He wasn't convicted of anything like that.
Check this out. It still doesn't matter. If you're the head of a corporation, every dime should be accountable for.
Exactly.
I'm going to use my own money for the things I need. I don't care if it's $10. This is state money. You shouldn't touch it.
Obama goes to the local store in Washington, D.C. and buys sandwiches...
We're talking about the president.
And that's taxpayer money. I'm just saying, when a politician uses taxpayer money.
You know the game plan. No. You know the procedure.
You should know what to use.
Yeah, you know what to do.
At the right time. Yeah. Your money.
But you're allowed to do stuff like go get lunch.
But if you're allowed to, then it's good.
A certain amount.
Yeah, so you should be allowed to go play golf if it's for the betterment of the city of Compton.
I believe $4,999 20 some times.
Well, that was not what Omar Bradley was convicted for. And his first conviction, by the way, was overturned when he was convicted of the same thing, 13, 14 years ago. This trial that he had in 2017 was a retrial from what happened 15 years ago. So I said, I'm going to sit in this trial.
All right, let me ask you this, Alonzo. Don't you think, honestly, that we're being watched and we're in high positions anyway?
I think if people of color like you and I
are
being watched.
Period.
Yeah. Also, only black folks? I think electorals get
more than say.
I seen all the Mexicans always getting done.
I said people of color. People of color.
Yeah, I've seen some white folks.
Very rarely. Very rarely.
Yeah, but yeah.
But they do
come at politicians in the ghetto areas and stuff like that. But
because America is going to be a majority minority country soon.
That was a white chief and Bill that got rolled up, and it was a bunch of people in Bill that got rolled up, and
they allow white people to resign. Yeah. They allow them to step down. They allow them to.
What's Lee Baca?
Lee Baca's in prison.
My point.
Yeah, but
so they go after everybody.
He's of color though. He's of Latino descent.
Is he?
I don't see Bratton or any of the. I never saw Chief Daryl Gates looking at any. Time.
He got his ass out. So
he resigned. They let him resign.
Yeah, they got him.
So yeah, I do believe that people of color that are in political positions do have a microscope over them.
Exactly.
You know, look at the Ray Nagin from New Orleans. He's in prison serving 12 years in the feds just for same thing that Omar Bradley did, spending a little bit of money for the betterment of New Orleans. Yeah. But they wanted to get rid of Ray Nagin.
Well, Chicago got a whole bunch of mayors that done got indicted.
Oh, yeah. Blagojevich was one of them. All right. So, you bring up an interesting point about interrogation, and I want to talk about that because there's this show on TV right now, and we're not going to go into the details of the show this week. Maybe next week we'll talk about the show, but it's called When They See Us, and it's about the Central Park five teenagers that were convicted of a rape in 1989. And it turned out they were all innocent. And how were they found guilty? They were found guilty by aggressive interrogation tactics that the police did on all five of these teenagers separately, to where the teenagers eventually just started to say whatever the police wanted to hear because they want to go home. Here's one of the tactics that cops will use. They'll say, look, tell us the truth and you can go home. Tell us the truth and we'll let you leave.
You'll be out of here before dinner time. You don't tell us the truth, we're going to whoop your ass because this was wrong. You knew it was wrong. I mean, I done had it come all different kind of way. I done been slapped by the police. I can say his name now. What's the fat white boy name in Linwood? They was the dirty ones. Graves.
Graves.
And
the Vikings.
Graves wanted me to do an interview. They raided our house, found a lot of gang shit, photo albums and all that shit. And then wanted me to do a gang interview right before this cop shit was coming out. This shit, cops on TV. And I told him, no, I didn't want to do it. Motherfucker slapped the shit out of me. I didn't do the video, but it was like, goddamn. But I'm handcuffed. I'm sitting there. And these people here, I wouldn't sign no release or nothing. And the motherfucker threw me in the cage. You ask how? What choices do you have? When you're dealing with the police, and they can do whatever the fuck they want to do with you, you know what I'm saying? All you can do is just absorb what they got to give, what they bringing to you, and you can't do no more. All the hollering and want to fight and all of that shit, you only bringing more shit to you.
Yeah. Now I don't think Reggie Wright Jr. used those type of techniques when you was bringing people in.
I never really had to put my hands on people, but I have put my hands on people. But
what do you think about the aggressive style of interrogation?
Yeah, we didn't get away with that at our department, I'll be honest. I'm not saying we wasn't a little heavy handed or stuff like that, but
unnecessary shit.
Yeah, we didn't. We were mainly more of a city of of respect and all of that, because we have black management, and you get a couple of complaints about that shit. They'll move your ass out of where you wouldn't want
to
be.
I know, but a gangbanger ain't finna go to the police station and say
for instance. You wouldn't believe how many times they
did. That's some crazy shit.
Yeah, they
pulled us over one day on Stockton, and pants sagging, my pants are sagging, and the motherfucker took the billy club across my ass and across the back part of my ass, bam, bam, with your pants hanging all down. No nothing.
Compton PD?
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, come on. Compton PD, all of them ain't good guys, Reg.
No, I have never
I'm
said that.
I'm talking about foolish shit.
But I said, but would you complain? And if you came and complained, and you got two or three complaints like that, they roll your ass up.
Yeah, but if you're the subject of an investigation, like these five kids were the subject of a rape investigation, there's nothing to complain about. Okay, you can't. Okay. Who do you complain to?
Wait a minute,
they
man.
Think you're
guilty. If this was
guilty,
your mama, my mama, I would want some aggressive officers like that if I felt they were the ones that did it. Now, I'm not for creating evidence or lying on people. That wasn't what we was about. But as far as setting them in the box and trying to get one of them, and then when you get, I mean, you get five of them to start telling you the story, and then you start believing it, especially when one started, once that one cracked and told them they were down the right, and it's obvious they done did something wrong.
But
I don't know the whole case.
No, they're
I know
what
Corey
the police
Wise,
are saying to them.
Well, that's what we find out now, because Matias Reyes or whatever, we end up finding out his DNA was the one that was involved in it.
Teenagers had nothing to do with this rape at all.
Well, they were there. I mean,
they were in Central Park.
They were
in different
Park
parts of the park. They didn't even know each other.
Correct. But my point is, you never give it up. But once, if this was my mother or something like that, and I got one guy that's starting to say, yeah, okay, we were there, and we did this and did that, I'm going to start pushing and stay on the other three or four guys, because why would this guy, you know, in my mind, why would this guy be copping out to something like that if they didn't do it? Now, I understand this is a rich white lady, you know, I think she worked in Wall Street or something like that, or she was a banker or something like that, that this happened to. And so, of course, it was a high-profile case, but it's an unfortunate situation. I hate that the guys broke down and told it. I guess they was exhausted or tired.
Have any one of these guys ever, had they came out and told a story of
how they
was interrogated?
They just started to do interviews now.
Or was any of them beat up?
Yeah, they were slapped.
This is why. A young kid.
You can't slap me to make me tell.
And they're all teenagers also. Yeah. So think of a 14-year-old mind.
And then you're going in there, you got a grown-ass man popping you upside your head. It can stop. I tell you what you want me to say.
I'll tell you what you want me to say. If you stop hitting me, I might say that, but they ain't said that. They start telling the story of what the cops was pushing.
Well, I think
they told that story.
They denied any involvement for hours and hours and hours.
Everybody does at the beginning.
And then eventually they start to repeat the stuff that they're hearing in the questions.
Because they wanted the hits or the slaps or whatever to stop.
Because they say, look, you're not going home.
Yeah.
You're not leaving here.
And they were slow. That's what people don't know about the kids. The guy, Corey Wise, he was deaf in the ear or couldn't hear. His dad worked for a law office, and he admitted in the lawsuit, in the lawsuit that he was a little slow and had a hard time hearing and all of that. Matter of fact, he got tried as an adult. That's the one that was 16 years old that they tried as, and he had to go to an adult prison eventually. But he got it's called Corey Innocent Project in Colorado. And so he doing stuff for people pro bono from his money and stuff like that. So shout out to him. Keep up the good work, bro. I hate that happened. I mean, there's incidents where that I know that it happens, and it's unfortunate, but I understand the zealous of law enforcement trying to make a case like that happen.
But how many innocent people went to jail because people eventually under the pressure of a 10-hour interrogation and being so, immature or slow, so now you just eventually just say whatever.
We're supposed to just put a cap on it?
I mean, I think cops got to be a little bit more aware of their style of their technique in interrogation. If the information that this guy is feeding me is the same stuff that I already told him that I know you did,
supposed to be a check and balance.
That's almost being stupid.
And that was the good thing about Greg Hadings that I liked a lot, where he pretty much always said things that, and that's what a good cop would have done, where he said things that Keefe D didn't know that we knew, he told us. And that's why we always believe his story. And so a good cop would press for that, because it's not usually what I'm asking you. It's the lies that usually get you caught up. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're trying to focus on, but the trap you for another way.
How do they get compensated for that? Why the DA can't see through some of
the DA,
shit?
She catching hell.
Oh, man.
She catching hell.
And they should.
She is.
Okay, let's mention her name. Yeah, the prosecutor is Linda Fairstein.
Oh, she was on Netflix. She was on Netflix board, and they done kicked her off.
And she's being, she has to relinquish all these positions that she had on different boards. Yeah. Also, she's the author of 30 novels, and now the publishers of those novels are considering continuing to use her as a writer. People are now on the heads of these publishers to say, why would you publish Linda Fairstein's books considering what she did to these five teenagers? So she's going through it now.
She's done.
But she ain't going to go to jail. She's not going to do time.
Yeah. But that's the point. She should go to jail.
Some people...
Where's the accountability for this?
If they lie and if they knew. But,
check this out, Reggie. If the police knew they would go to prison for what happened to these five kids, they would completely revamp the style of interrogation.
Because that would be every time motherfuckers would be like, I'm going to get Reggie Jr. in jail. I'm about to go lie and say I robbed the bank. And then turn out later I didn't rob the bank.
But you want to go to jail for robbing a bank for 10 years just to get someone in trouble?
Come out later and I have James come and say, no, motherfucker, I'm the one to rob the bank. That was me to rob the bank.
No one would want to be setting people up like that. A crime and lose their freedom just to get someone in trouble.
What y'all just said, what y'all just said was, shouldn't law enforcement go to jail for when people create stuff or...
Yes,
or when
absolutely. They created a case. Yeah. They absolutely created a case against these five people.
Let me say this.
They didn't create a case.
They did.
They didn't.
This has been a Digital Soapbox Network production.
This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to 500 Greatest Songs, a podcast based on Rolling Stone's hugely popular, influential, and sometimes controversial list. I'm Brittany Spanos.
And I'm Rob Sheffield. We're here to shed light on the greatest songs ever made and discover what makes them so great.
From classics like Fleetwood Mac's Dreams to the Ronettes' Be My Baby, and modern day classics like The Killers' Mr. Brightside.
Listen to Rolling Stone's 500 Greatest Songs on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.